literally, when mum and dad were told that I had to buy an investment, mum sort of went, "All right, okay. Will she ever be able to have kids? Why on earth?" She asked that as a question. No one has an egg. And they sort of went, "Well, yeah, I suppose." She went, "All right, okay." And sort of took me home. And because when I was a baby, there wasn't sort of any problems. You know, I crawled and I walked. It was kind of much, I think, easier for them to deal with it. Yeah. And it was only as I grew up and sort of I got to the age of sort of 5, 6 that I started having problems walking. Then by the age of 7, I was paralysed. It had sort of given them time to sort of get used to the system and get used to the doctors and just understand how to kind of play the game of sort of that medical, because it was a very medical model back then.
Yeah.
So mum and dad just didn't bring me up. You know, I was the same as Sian. And I remember dad, you know, very clearly, you know, he was an architect, so he knew how inaccessible the world was because he'd sort of helped design it. And him just saying, "Well, I don't care if you're in a wheelchair, just, you know, you're just going to get on with it." And that was really positive at that point because I think it just gave me a lot of confidence. My parents were amazing because they just didn't tolerate discrimination. And in a way, before we talked about medical model or inclusion or any of that, they didn't know any of that stuff, but they just knew the right thing to do was to educate me and include me in society.
Yeah, and to spread that message to other people. So they're saying, well, actually, it might be acceptable, it might be routine, but it's wrong.
And I remember trying to go to the cinema with friends. So I must have been about 9 or 10 and being told I couldn't go in because I didn't have an adult with me. And my mum sort of sending me back with my friends because we'd kind of left. And mum going, "No, go back, go back. You know, I'm not taking you home. Go and tell them that you've never spontaneously combusted." And me going, "Okay." And we all went back and, you know, when they tried to send me out again, me said, "No, I'm not a fire risk. You can't send me out because I've never spontaneously combusted." And
that was the reasoning.
Yeah, fire risk. We don't want people like you in because you're a fire risk. So, you know, mum and dad taught me in different ways to deal with it. And, you know, I still use a lot of that stuff now. You know, I still experience people who talk down to me or discriminate or want to try and discriminate.
Yeah.
And it's quite good to have had all those years of practice because you just get better at it because you've spent so long dealing with it.
When did your sporting ability first show itself? Was that primary school or later on? Or
there were very few lifts. There were no drop curbs. You know, so you had to learn to jump up a curb or, you know, there were no accessible toilets. There were very few public toilets.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I wanted to go to the loo out, if I wanted to go out with my friends, you kind of had to learn to climb stairs and drag my chair. And to do that, I kind of had to be fit. And that sort of came from doing sport. And then just gradually over time, I realised that actually I was quite a competitive person. A little bit, hugely competitive. I'm just... And so that's part of my parents' encouragement to do sport because I just wanted to race over everything. I wanted to beat my sister over everything.
Yeah.
And they thought it would calm me down.
And channel it a little bit.
Yeah, and just, you know, just like, okay, let's tire her out. And now I've got a daughter, I think I can see why they did that. But also just, it was kind of a natural thing to go in. And again, back then, you know, I was 12 in 1982, you know, no, the word Paralympic hadn't been invented. So there was very little sort of disability sport. You didn't see disabled people in society. You know, they're very much excluded. But then I remember watching the London Marathon. And in the early 80s, they had a wheelchair race as part of the London Marathon. And that kind of changed pretty much my life for me. Because I remember saying to Mum, "I'm going to do the London Marathon one day." And her saying to me, "Oh, yeah, of course you are. Yeah, don't embarrass me." You know, parents are very kind of low-key about stuff. But you know, I remember seeing that and thinking, right, that's what I want to do. That's the sport for me. Wheelchair racing, nothing else. That's the only sport for me.
You're seen as being an icon as well, I think, to many disabled people. Does that give you an added pressure? Is that a great responsibility? Do you feel that you've forged that path and that you've made that route easier, that young disabled people with a sporting interest can now go, "I want to be Tanny. I want to be Tanny Grey Thompson"?
I hope I've made it easier, but the reality is it's still fairly difficult if you're a disabled child who wants to do sport, because it's still hard to do inclusive sport in school. Mm-hmm. It's still a challenge to find sports clubs that will willingly embrace you. And yes, there are lots who do, but there's also a number who sort of panic a bit and think, "Oh, what do we do?" But for me, it was always about, you know, making it better. And there was a responsibility, you know, it wasn't sort of every day I woke up thinking, "Oh, I feel responsible for disability sport." But there was a certain part of what I was doing, which was, okay, I need to make it better for the kids coming through.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have to fight for the same things I did. They shouldn't have to fight for equitable kit or equitable funding or recognition or people telling them, you know, "Oh, it's so brave and marvellous what you do." Elite athletes shouldn't be fighting for that. And so I hope some of those things that have changed. And then, you know, 25 years of my life in athletics, you know, and then have a bit of a gap and I come to the House of Lords and I find I'm kind of fighting for different things in a slightly different way. But there still is that kind of responsibility that all the opportunities I had, and I had loads of opportunities and a bit of luck and lots of help, other people should try and have some of that as well.
Tanny Gray-Thompson knows all about winning medal after medal at the Paralympics, but she was taking on a different opponent, from the track to the House of Lords, challenging the government's plans to change disability benefits.
So in terms of your role as a people's peer, when it comes to something like the Welfare Reform Bill, do you feel then a huge sense of responsibility?
It is a responsibility because, again, it's about that. I don't want to disappoint people and I don't want to give people false hope that it's okay because I'm here, I can just change the world. Because actually that's not how this place works. So, I was always interested in sort of benefits and support and welfare. And then the bill came along at a really good time, but I'm still on a massive learning curve in terms of the politics of this place. What was great about being in sport is when you won, you got a gold medal and you knew you'd won. In here, you can push the minister to make loads and loads of concessions or a little bit. And sometimes you don't know if you've won or not. And it's not just down to the vote, although that's quite a simplistic way of looking at it. Sometimes you can win and sometimes you don't realise you've won until 2 days later and you think, actually, do you know what, that was kind of okay. And I learnt a lot from what we went through with welfare reform because, you know, I got involved because I was interested and I cared and I thought it's a fantastic bill that I can follow through from beginning to end to understand how each different stage works. It's very emotional because I know, you know, personally know lots and lots of disabled people who are just sitting there thinking, you know, the Lords is where we can make a difference. And that's a massive responsibility. It's why I work so hard here. And why I'm here kind of lots and lots of days a week and lots of hours every day is because to make it effective change, you've got to be here and you've got to know people and you've got to understand how the game's played. You can't just come in, dither around a bit and hope that people are going to go with you and leave on the strength of one argument. It's much more complex than that. It is a bit like school. The food's a bit like school as well. But, you know, if you learn something every day, you get better and better and then you can have a more effective chance of changing it. Literally, when mum and dad were told that I had spinal bifida, mum sort of went, "Oh, right, okay. Will she ever be able to have kids? Why on earth?" She asked that as a question. No one has anything. And they sort of went, "Well, yes, but she went, "Oh, right, okay." And sort of took me home. And because when I was a baby, there wasn't sort of any problems. You know, I crawled and I walked. Yeah. It was kind of much, I think, easier for them to deal with it. Yeah. And it was only as I grew up and sort of I got to the age of sort of 5, 6 that I started having problems walking. Then by the age of 7, I was paralysed. it had sort of given them time to sort of get used to the system and get used to the doctors and just understand how to kind of play the game of sort of that medical, because it was a very medical model back then.
Yeah.
So mum and dad just didn't bring me up, you know, I was the same as Sian. And I remember dad, you know, very clearly, you know, he was an architect, so he knew how inaccessible the world was because he'd sort of helped design it. And him just saying, well, I don't care if you're in a wheelchair, just, you know, you're just going to get on with it. And that was really positive at that point because I think it just gave me a lot of confidence. My parents were amazing because they just didn't tolerate discrimination. And, you know, way before we talked about medical model or inclusion or any of that, they didn't know any of that stuff, but they just knew the right thing to do was to educate me and include me in society.
Yeah, and to spread that message to other people. So they're saying, well, actually, it might be acceptable, it might be routine, but it's wrong.
And I remember trying to go to the cinema with friends, so I must have been about 9 or 10 and being told I couldn't go in because I didn't have an adult with me. And my mum sort of sending me back with my friends because we'd kind of left. And mum go, no, go back, you know, I'm not taking you home. Go and tell them that you've never spontaneously combusted. And me going, okay. And we all went back and, you know, when they tried to send me out again, me saying, no, I'm not a fire risk, you can't send me out because I've never spontaneously combusted. And
that was their reasoning?
Yeah, fire risk. We don't want people like you in because you're a fire risk. So, you know, mum and dad taught me in different ways to deal with it. And, you know, I still use a lot of that stuff now. You know, I still experience people who talk down to me or discriminate or want to try and discriminate.
Yeah.
And it's quite good to have had all those years of practice because you just get better at it because you've spent so long dealing with it.
When did your sporting ability first show itself? Was that primary school or later on? Or
there were very few lifts. There were no drop curbs, you know, so you had to learn to jump up a curb or, you know, there were no accessible toilets. There were very few public toilets. Yeah. So, you know, if I wanted to go to the loo out, if I wanted to go out with my friends, you kind of had to learn to climb stairs and drag my chair. And to do that, I kind of had to be fit. And that sort of came from doing sport. And then just gradually over time, I realised that actually I was quite a competitive person. A little bit, hugely competitive. I'm just... And so that's part of my parents' encouragement to do sport because I just wanted to race over everything. I wanted to beat my sister over everything.
Yeah.
And they thought it would calm me down.
And channel it a little bit.
Yeah, and just, you know, just like, okay, let's tire her out. And now I've got a daughter, I think I can see why they did that. but also just, it was kind of a natural thing to go in. And again, back then, you know, I was 12 in 1982, you know, no, the word Paralympic hadn't been invented. So there was very little sort of disability sport. You didn't see disabled people in society. You know, they're very much excluded. But then I remember watching the London Marathon. And in the early 80s, they had a wheelchair race as part of the London Marathon. And that kind of changed pretty much my life for me. Because I remember saying to Mum, I'm going to do the London Marathon one day. And her saying to me, oh, yeah, of course you are. Yeah, don't embarrass me. You know, parents are very kind of low-key about stuff. But you know, I remember seeing that and thinking, right, that's what I want to do. That's the sport for me. Wheelchair racing, nothing else. That's the only sport for me.
Mm. You're seen as being an icon as well, I think, to many disabled people. Does that give you an added pressure? Is that a great responsibility? Do you feel that you've forged that path and that you've made that route easier, that young disabled people with a sporting interest can now go, I want to be Tanny. I want to be Tanny Grey Thompson.
I hope I've made it easier, but the reality is it's still fairly difficult if you're a disabled child who wants to do sport, because it's still hard to do inclusive sport in school. Mm-hmm. It's still a challenge to find sports clubs that will willingly embrace you. And yes, there are lots who do, mm-hmm. but there's also a number who sort of panic a bit and think, oh, what do we do? But for me, it was always about, you know, making it better. And there was a responsibility, you know, it wasn't sort of every day I woke up thinking, oh, I feel responsible for disability sport. But there was a certain part of what I was doing, which was, okay, I need to make it better for the kids coming through. Yeah. They shouldn't have to fight for the same things I did. They shouldn't have to fight for equitable kit or equitable funding or recognition or people telling them, you know, oh, it's so brave and marvellous what you do. Elite athletes shouldn't be fighting for that. And so I hope some of those things that have changed. And then, you know, 25 years of my life in athletics, you know, I then have a bit of a gap and I come to the House of Lords and I find I'm kind of fighting for different things in a slightly different way. But there still is that kind of responsibility that all the opportunities I had, and I had loads of opportunities and a bit of luck and lots of help, other people should try and have some of that as well.
Tanny Grey Thompson knows all about winning medal after medal at the Paralympics, but she was taking on a different opponent. From the track to the House of Lords, challenging the government's plans to change disability benefits.
So in terms of your role as a people's peer, when it comes to something like the Welfare Reform Bill, do you feel then a huge sense of responsibility?
It is a responsibility because, again, it's about that. I don't want to disappoint people and I don't want to give people false hope that it's OK because I'm here, I can just change the world. Because actually that's not how this place works. So, you know, I was always interested in sort of benefits and support and welfare. And then, you know, the bill came along at a really good time, but I'm still on a massive learning curve in terms of the politics of this place. What was great about being in sport is when you won, you got a gold medal and you knew you'd won. In here, you can push the minister to make loads and loads of concessions or a little bit. And sometimes you don't know if you've won or not. And it's not just down to the vote, although that's quite a simplistic way of looking at it. Sometimes you can win and sometimes you don't realise you've won until 2 days later and you think, actually, do you know what, that was kind of okay. And I learnt a lot from what we went through with welfare reform because, you know, I got involved because I was interested and I cared and I thought it's a fantastic bill that I can follow through from beginning to end to understand how each different stage works. It's very emotional because I know, you know, personally know lots and lots of disabled people who are just sitting there thinking, you know, the Lords is where we can make a difference. And that's a massive responsibility. It's why I work so hard here and why I'm here kind of lots and lots of days a week and lots of hours every day is because to make it effective change, you've got to be here and you've got to know people and you've got to understand how the game's played. You can't just come in, dither around a bit and hope that people are going to go with you and leave on the strength of one argument. It's much more complex than that. It is a bit like school. The food's a bit like school as well. But, you know, if you learn something every day, you get better and better, and then you can have a more effective chance of changing it.